to come up with the folks at the courthouse and surrounding areas, and I think Carrie will help with the details and see if we can contribute some groceries or food or whatever.
Oh, okay.
But it will be our next lunch. At our next meeting, we'll be on the lawn of the courthouse.
Is this for the cater that?
Huh?
Can we cater that or what?
I think we're just going to have a potluck with people in the courthouse. I'll bring in something like a picnic. And we will be going back to our regular breakfast the first Tuesday of each month on a monthly basis starting on the 3rd. And Carrie and I will be reviewing the list to make sure it's up to date and inclusive. And of course, that time will be at 7 o'clock on that Tuesday morning. So if you don't get an invitation, check with me, but I'm telling you now, we're meeting next, the 3rd at 7 o'clock.
So we need to notify Ron of appointment.
Well, I think Carrie's already done that. Yeah. She's already done that. Yeah.
Is this picnic have anything to do with your flower garden that you was going to do?
No. Okay. This is just the end of the summer picnic theme type thing.
Okay.
The day after Labor Day.
I hope that doesn't mean that winter's the next day.
It might be here the day of.
It happened before then. All right, Shad, I think we're ready for you. If you'd like to come up and give us your report.
Absolutely. Appreciate your time. And I agree. I hope this winter's not the next day. reason why I'm here today is to give a brief update on the status of the Tannerite fire. Before I do, though, if I don't bring it up now, I'll forget. I know myself. Commissioner Noble had mentioned there's some questions, and I've been working with Matt Gaffney at the county attorney's office to finalize the what's the name of that agreement?
Power agreement.
The power agreement, but what's the name?
Joint aware how where you're in power line sharing lease agreements, the official title.
Power line sharing agreement in order to tap into the existing power that Union has and run power from the Union line to the new Lumen communication site. That agreement's finalized. Matt was just telling me there's maybe a minor issue that's easy to overcome. It was in the draft language and got left out of the final language, but my understanding is it's ready for signature, and we're ready to enter that agreement with approval from the county attorney's office, and everything looks good. So I just wanted to bring that up, and I assume that was what your question was.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make sure the provision that was in there for addressing it on an annual basis, and Matt checked it, and it is. And
Matt, is this something we need to go ahead and provide a motion for to accept?
Yeah, just pending this one minor addition, which they've already agreed to. I'm sure it was just an oversight.
That thing's pending, and you have approved the language and so on. So if we could get a motion to, Tom, you want to?
So I'll make a motion that we enter into the contract with Union on the power share agreement out on the Jonah site, pending the one clerical change.
Second.
Any discussion? If not, I'll signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. So,
easy. On. All right, so for an update on the Tannerite fire, about 1 o'clock in the afternoon or 12:30, somewhere close to that, we received a call for a fire that was very close to the Burnt Lake feed ground. So our volunteer firefighters responded, and while en route, we saw the smoke column beginning to develop, and it looked like it had quite a bit of steam underneath of it and was moving fast. And so we responded in kind and sent a tremendous number of our volunteer firefighters. In total, we had 8 of our fire apparatus on scene, you know, within minutes of dispatch. And the fire was... started in the grass and the sage, and it was at the base of a slope, and the wind was pushing straight up the slope, and in fire terminology, we call that coming into alignment, where the fuel, the weather, and the topography all three major or critical factors to determine the growth of a fire are aligned with each other. So the slope and the wind and the fuel are all three point in the same direction, and that's what happened on this fire. So unfortunately, because of the limited access, we weren't able to get our fire trucks where they needed to be access the flames as they were quickly progressing. So we had a extremely well coordinated initial attack with the BLM and with the Forest Service and with the state of Wyoming, and immediately stood up our agency administrators group according to our annual operating plan with our federal cooperators. We followed the protocol exactly, and everything came together the way you would hope it would. It was just an excellent relationship that we've established over many years, and I'm very pleased to report that through that relationship we established unified command and called in additional resources from the federal agencies. And the biggest thing that was absolutely critical to that is that our firefighters on the ground were trying to actively suppress the sagebrush fire, and because it was a wind-driven fire, the flame lengths were in excess of 20 feet. So you can imagine a wall of 20-foot flame coming towards the firefighters. We can spray water all day long in that amount of flame, and it's not going to put it out. There's too much intensity of the fuel and the heat. So what we do is we rely heavily on air resources to drop slurry, and when the fire hits that slurry, it doesn't stop the fire. The slurry doesn't put the fire out, but it's called retardant. The slurry reduces the intensity of the fire and brings those 20-foot flame lengths down to a more manageable intensity, and that's exactly what happened. Is through our coordinated attack, we were able to make best use of the air resources, reduce the intensity of the fire. And our firefighters were literally standing on the porches of the homes and actively suppressing the fire right up to the property line of the structures. So it was a great success all the way around. We did a tremendous job of saving properties and lives and no injuries. And it was a very complex, fast-moving fire with a lot of moving parts. But through a very well-coordinated effort, we had a significant amount of success and were able to make best use of the resources and keep the fire small and prevent it from going big. And I think in hindsight, I've got nothing but great things to say about the efforts of our volunteer firefighters and our federal cooperators and the process that was implemented that exactly the way the plan should go.
Well, Shan, I'd like to say you passed the credit on to your crew, appropriately so, but I'd like to say that you yourself are to be commended for your quick thinking and action in terms of putting these resources together, calling in the aerial support that you did, because if it had not been done very much in a timely fashion, even though it were done, we might not have had you might not have had the success that you did in terms of saving all of those structures. So time was clearly of the essence, and I think you're to be commended for exercising that in that regard. So thank you.
Amen. Yeah, amen.
Thank you very much. But again, I can't take credit. It was a coordinated effort amongst all the agencies.
Well, no, but somebody's got to call the shots. That's right.
Thank you very much. With that, a big part of my duties and responsibilities are coordinating with the other agency administrators and establishing those cooperative agreements that are necessary during all wildland fires. Working through the wildfire decision support system, the tool the federal agencies use to document and work through the decision making process and the long term planning process for those fires. So I've been heavily engaged as an agency administrator working through that process. Along with that comes the cost share agreements and the delegation of authority for the incoming teams and the management direction and the suppression repair, the rehabilitation, all those kind of necessary decisions are a big part of our coordinated efforts. So with that, I'd like to request permission from the commissioners to move forward with the cost share agreement. It's not in final form, but we've got a draft form that we're still working on some of the final details from, but I'd like to be able to move forward with that cost share agreement. So.
Mr. Chairman, I move we move forward with that cost share agreement, but in addition to it, I think we need to formally let Shad know that in future situations like this, that he does have the authority on our behalf to negotiate the cost share agreements, because that's something that it comes up when it comes up, and sometimes we're not there, which we weren't this time, and he needs to know he has the authority to move forward on that.
Second.
On our behalf.
All right, so there's a motion and a second, and actually the motion is two-pronged. One of it is to accept the cost share agreement that Shad is in the process of negotiating, and in the future, the second part of the motion is to allow Shad to act on behalf of the county to enter into those cost sharing discussions representing the county.
Absolutely.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any discussion on that?
Well, I've got a question. Shad, when you get into, is this a before, and I know that I'm not going to word this very, very good, but this is how I'm going to ask it. So when you go into one of these situations like this one, for instance, is it after the fact that you sit down when all the costs are in and that's when you do this, or do you have an agreement in place prior to that says, okay, it's going to cost X, we know going in that you're going to pay a portion of that X? How does that work?
So we do annual preparedness meetings where we try to meet with the other agency administrators and talk about how we want to handle, in broad strokes, future fires. So we've got a general idea based on previous incidents, how we want to handle future incidents. But the specific details are different on every fire based on how many jurisdictions are involved, where it starts, what started it, what direction the fire is going, what values at risk are in front of the fire, how much effort is put into protecting those values at risk. So there it'd be impossible for us to say that we're always going to treat every fire the same way and have the same cost share agreement for every fire. I've been on numerous fires in my career. I've never seen the same cost share agreement twice. What we try to do to get your specific question is very early in the process, usually during initial attack or very shortly after. We have in our annual operating plan, we've got a requirement that all the agency administrators for the affected fire have to get together and begin creating that cost share agreement. And the reason why is because sometimes the strategy and tactics on how to suppress the fire don't change, but how we track the costs of those air resources or ground resources or incident management teams or logistical support, how we track those costs might change very significantly based on the terms of the cost share agreement. So if we know what the terms of the cost share agreement are early in the process, that allows us to appropriately track those costs for the duration of the incident.
Okay, thank you.
Generally speaking, just to add a little bit to that, the one thing you always look at is how much is on private land, how much is state, how much BLM, how much Forest Service, and that helps determine the cost share agreement. So the Fontenelle fire down in Big Piney, we didn't have a fire chief engaged in this, and so I was new at fire, and with, thank goodness, the state guy helped me a lot in negotiating on the county's behalf in that agreement, but it happens after the fire starts, because you have to know where the fire's at, what it's doing, where it's going. That all determines that cost share agreement and what property it's on. So that's why it's important that somebody on the ground be there to help do that. So
any other questions? If not, we got a motion, a second. Call the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Motion carries unanimously. Okay.
Any further questions on me?
Not at this time.
Not at this time.
I know that you'd express your praise for me, but I would like to reflect the My personal praise to the volunteer firefighters in our organization in whole. We've had an exceptionally busy summer. We've had numerous critical incidents this summer, and it's been a rewarding experience from my perspective as a chief to be allowed to call myself a member of this organization and watch how they respond to these numerous critical incidents we've had all summer long. And this fire is no different than any of the other the major fires we've had this summer, but it's just been just a humbling experience to be able to watch our volunteer firefighters rise to meet the occasion and exceed my expectations over and over again.
So I would like you to carry that same praise forward from us.
Yeah.
Because I know you pushed them hard.
Were any of your recent graduates able to participate in this, which is very good?
Yeah, almost all of them were. Yeah, it was, yeah, we've had a significant presence on the Tannery Fire, and many of our recent graduates have been involved in that. Yeah.
Good deal.
So Chad, is the thing dead now?
Oh, good question. I'm sorry. No, I should have explained that. Yeah. So right now, current estimates are the fire is about 1,350 acres. I don't have the exact number, but it's close to that. We've got about 35% containment around that fire. When I say containment, imagine that means that we've got some sort of a control line in place that prevents that fire from jumping the control line and going off to the races again. So we're about 35% around that as of today's estimate. So we're continuing. Eventually we'll get all the way around the entire perimeter. But while we're doing that, there's still interior pockets of changes in vegetation and fuel type. A good example is that there's aspen trees in there, and underneath those aspen trees, it's shaded and covered, and there's a lot of fuel and duff underneath those aspen trees that the fire's still smoldering through. And when the sunlight hits it and things heat up, those aspen trees will burn. And so periodically through the day, you'll see, you know, a little whiff of smoke or a smoke column come up from those interior pockets. There is an aspen stand on the edge of the perimeter of the east flank of the fire that is currently threatening the perimeter. And we're working hard to suppress that fully and make sure that it doesn't jump our control perimeter that we're trying to establish. But to answer your question, the fire is no longer currently expanding in size. We've done our best we can to hold it in check, but there is still threats to that progress or progression, and we're doing everything we can to keep it within the existing perimeter. But there will still be interior pockets of heat that need to be suppressed, and we'll be actively working up there for the next several days, maybe into the next week, while it's called mop up, but while we clean up those interior pockets of heat and prevent them from jumping the control lines.
Do you have a number of how many apparatus and people you still have there from the volunteer?
So we've been backing off. Our obligation is for initial attack, and we're heavily committed on initial attack. So the first day we had numerous apparatus out there, and then each day we've gradually been reducing. Today we're actually down to just one fire apparatus, and then what that does is allow me to pull our initial attack resources back and make sure we're available for emergency response for the rest of the county. Now we still need to maintain a presence up there, and we're doing that. We're actively engaged in helping to fight the fire, but we've also got the rest of the county to worry about and make sure that we're available for response in the rest of the county. And plus, it's taxing to the volunteer firefighters. They've still got jobs to go to, and we can't expect them to drop their work and go fight these fires. So we do what we can to staff it with the people that are available, and we rotate people through those positions and keep a presence on the fire. And then I obviously attend all the, you know, the morning briefings, the planning meetings, and the CNG meetings, and the periodic meetings throughout the day.
So most of what's going on now is just footwork, so to speak?
Yeah, we don't. We have the capacity to bring in air resources if necessary, but we're not actively using those air resources until it becomes necessary. So yeah, the majority of the work that's going on right now is the firefighters on the ground. There's hand crews, and there's engine crews, and rehabilitation specialists that are cleaning up. Some of the suppression work that we do needs to be repaired and try to restore to the best of our ability back to its original state. Any damage that we do from firefighting efforts, we try to clean up afterwards, and so there's a lot of that going on right now too.
Chad, have you had any discussions, or do you have any comment or information with regards to what the current weather situation, fuels, et cetera, with regards to the need for a fire ban?
Yes, sir. I thought the question might come up. Yeah, so to change topics, it's worthwhile to review and make sure I clarify when and it's been my take in previous years that if we go into fire restrictions, I feel strongly that there should be a consistent and coordinated message amongst all the land management agencies. And so I feel that if Sublette County chooses to go into fire restrictions, we should very much try to coordinate that effort with the other agencies. And so we work very closely. We have weekly coordination calls with the BLM and the Forest Service. And a big part of that is we have a checklist every week that we review and say, you know, are we to the point where the risk of wildland fire exceeds the potential negative impact and consequences of implementing fire restrictions? So yeah, we are definitely having the conversations. A part of what we talk about is what's the predicted fire potential for the next several weeks? Is there an increase in the number of new starts? Are they human or natural cause fires? What's the daily fire occurrence situation? Is it increasing? Do we currently have adequate fire resources available for each agency and zone? Are the severity resources available for local agencies? Is there an increase or decrease in recreational visitors? Are there social, political, economic impacts? Are there preparations for higher or lower level of fire restriction, you know, fire danger rating signs? Does any of the agencies feel that the need to go immediately into restrictions? Should there be full or partial restrictions? So the list goes on and on. A big part of what drives that, though, is called fuel moisture content and energy release components. And the federal agencies spend a significant amount of their effort to measure how dry the fuels are in the sage and the timber and how receptive to burning they are. So it's a very well thought out, methodical process that we go into. It's certainly not a knee jerk reaction when we go into fire restrictions. And again, I try very hard to make sure that when I make a recommendation to the board to go into fire restrictions, that it's based on sound science and valid reasoning to require those fire restrictions, because I understand the negative consequences and how that impacts, you know, recreation and hunting and fishing and some of the, you know, the restrictions that those fire restrictions really place on the public. So we're having those weekly coordination calls. Actually, we're having it tomorrow, and we'll review all the matrices, and every agency will make their recommendations, and I'll update the board if anything changes. But as of right now, as of last week's coordination or the conversations we've had so far, there's no recommendations at this point to go into fire restrictions, because we haven't met a sufficient amount of those matrices.
Good. Thank you for that.
On a little different subject, the BLM has signed off on the Lumen site completely. Do we have a meeting today? Are we done with them?
I don't think we formally said we're done with them, but I do know that Matt Gaffney has provided the final agreement to Kerry, and that's ready to be signed. And
it's signed.
Oh, okay, so there we go. So
we're done.
Yeah.
And the BLM, I can't say enough about that. They were amazing help in moving this process forward in that timeline. Yeah.
So, Mr. Chairman, Chad, could you briefly explain the state fire suppression account and at what point that is triggered, like in this situation, and who pays what up until then? Give us an update on how that works, just so we all get a better understanding of it.
I'm happy to answer that question. So Sublette County participates in a statewide emergency fire suppression account. It's administered by the Wyoming State Forestry Division. The fire suppression account requires that we pay annual dues to participate in that account. Those dues are based on assessed valuation. We participated for as long as I've been here through unification. I know for a fact for many years before that. We frequently use the emergency fire suppression account, and we've benefited numerous times in covering the costs that would normally be borne by the county. So instead of the county having to pay the cost of these large catastrophic multi-million dollar fires, we rely on the emergency fire suppression account to cover those costs for us, and that's part of our participation in the program. The specific details are that whenever we have a large fire that threatens state and private lands and is a multi-jurisdictional fire, there's specific thresholds that need to be met on what's threatened and the size of the fire and so on. But I recognize those threshold criteria, and I make an immediate notification to the state forester and say I need to activate the emergency fire suppression account, which is one of the first things I did on this fire, and the Roseville fire, and the Cliff Creek fire, and every fire that we've had. Every major fire that meets those thresholds. We go to fires every day that don't meet the thresholds that we don't activate the emergency fire suppression account. It's just on the large catastrophic wildland fires. But when I provide the appropriate documentation and activate the emergency fire suppression account, we receive back confirmation of receipts and acknowledgement that the account's been opened. And then what that does is it allows the state suppression account to help us to cover the cost of suppression efforts. There are floor costs that need to be covered. Based on our effort, though, and the way we meet those floor costs is by the use of our initial attack resources. So when we send our firefighters there, the cost of the equipment of our fire apparatus, the wildland fire trucks, frequently meets those floor costs that are necessary to activate the emergency fire suppression account.
So the question I wasn't clear on is, so our costs from the initial attack, those floor costs, can be allocated to cover the, so in other words, it doesn't, it's not just for the time it's activated on, we can use our costs incurred before the suppression account was activated in order to meet our obligation?
Yes. The way we do that is part of our annual operating plan is that we've established an agreement with our federal cooperators that for the first 24 hours, we don't charge each other to help each other. It's a standard agreement that says that during initial attack that if I need help, I call our federal partners and they send their resources, and in return, we do the same for them, excluding air resources. We're just talking about engines. I'm sorry, I should make that clarification. But we don't charge each other. It's called a mutual aid period of 24 hours.
Right.
Past that 24 hours, then that's when cost share agreements happen, and we start figuring out how to share those costs out. And that's when the question of the emergency fire suppression account comes up, and if we've met those thresholds. But the way we've worded it in our annual operating plan is that once we've exceeded the mutual aid period of that first 24 hours, then we go back and track costs from the very beginning of the fire, from the initial onset of the incident, and then the emergency fire suppression account covers those costs from ignition forward.
Okay, good. Thank you. It's important we understand that, I think, so we get questions.
So the dues are based on an assessed evaluation?
Yes, sir.
For every county?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Is there currently only one county still that's not participating?
Yeah, the last couple of years, about 5 years ago, there was two or three holdout counties that did not participate. That's changed, and to my knowledge, as of today, there's two counties that aren't participating, but Campbell County is imminently going to join the emergency fire suppression account.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
And how much did the legislature add to that account this year?
I want to say $25 million. I don't want to.
15 or 25.
I'm sorry. I went down and went to the legislative session and spoke directly to this. I'm sorry. My memory's failing me.
It was 15. But I don't know.
It might have been 15. I'm sorry. I can't answer your question.
Backfill it up to where it had been.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so you remember during the Roosevelt fire, we tapped in heavily into the emergency fire suppression account, and as a result, it was very nearly down to zero. We've worked very, very closely with the Wyoming State Forestry Division and the other fire chiefs across the state, and our state legislators were very supportive, as well as the governor's office, of allocating funding to the to the emergency fire suppression account and refill those coffers, so to speak. And I'm sorry, I'm forgetting the number off the top of my head. I should know that number, and I don't remember off the top of my head. I'm very sorry. Okay. I feel bad. I should know that.
Gotcha.
It's a darn good thing we were paying into it.
Yes, sir. Yeah, we've
more than surpassed the amount we've paid.
Oh, my.
That's the best insurance anybody's ever had. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Thanks, Chad. I was trying to be brief.
You did.
We had questions.
Thank you very much, everybody. Okay.
Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Chad.
Do you want this now?
Back on pass that.
Just get on Gary, please. Thank you so much. And
Chad, thank you for the information.
So I think Dennis has a plat for us to sign and re-sign or redo or put other signatures up?
Yeah. So, good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
This is for the Barger Fourth Subdivision First Amendment, and it is some of the pictures and we got the plot map here. It is straightening out some lot lines that got built across. Both these property owners have been together and then completed agreements with each other. And the lots got reconfigured, sharing the same exact, the lot sizes did not change or anything, but it's just a replatting of the lots to make the homes, the well, etc., fit within the setbacks.
Fit on their own property.
Fit on their own property, yes.
They built the product 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
So this is the final version. We've got stuff changed around with your guys' correct signature lines and stuff on it. Carrie's correct signature line. This plat, again, the banks and the mortgage companies kind of held this whole process up, and they're more to blame than anybody else on all this. So.
So you simply need a signature. This is something we've already passed twice.
Yes, passed twice, and the first time was a year ago. So.
Yeah. Okay, Scott, do you have the correct pen we need to use?
Thank you.
I can turn it around again.
That works for me. These other
guys follow you, Tom. I try.
He didn't have his glasses on.
Yeah, see, right.
I could have signed it up. Signed it up.
Not really that, but single malt would be good.
There will be very happy, several very happy people.
They finally have their improvements on the right piece of ground.
Yeah.
They have a sale closing right away, and so they got motivated to motivate their mortgage company.
So. Well, it's kind of been in the process. But and some of it you can, I think, blame on contours of land, how stuff laid up there, and just kind of how everybody started, but it's worth getting property corners.
We should have moved a lot from that subdivision.
Over the years?
Yeah.
Gentlemen, appreciate it.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Hope the rest of your day is as easy.
I think we're on the downhill side.
Absolutely.
Time to go home. Speaking of which, I think we're ready to recess tonight. And Robert, we're going to.